When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, everybody. It's Weird Islanders, the podcast, back once again. My name is Dan. That is Mike. How are you tonight, Mike?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm pretty excited about this Weird Islander, the guest. It's definitely a unique Weird Islander because his most shining moment on the ice for the Islanders, it's almost like the Mandela effect. Did it actually happen?
Right.
That is a big existential question for all of us to answer ourselves, and I don't think any two people's answer is going to be the same.
Yeah, it's actually funny you mentioned that. I just found out that Ed McMahon never worked for Publishers Clearinghouse. He worked for American Family Publishing, and all this time I, like many other people, assumed he worked for Publishers Clearinghouse, but that was actually not the case. So there's a Mandela effect in action, but we are going to talk about that. Probably not Ed McMahon, but we're going to talk about all kinds of stuff tonight with our great guest. He is one of the co-hosts of the Skates at the Stakes podcast. He's AJ DeVito. AJ, how are you?
I am great. It's an honor to be here.
Oh, thank you very much. It's an honor for us to have you on. We had your compatriot, Rat Martin, on last season. You guys do such a great job. I listen to you all the time. And on a normal episode of Skates at the Stakes, the first voice we hear as listeners is yours. How did you draw that assignment? Is it just one of those things that just sort of happened when you guys started doing it? And, you know, that's how it happens in the podcast game. You just, nobody ever knows what they're doing. And then they just start doing stuff. And before you know it, you're doing it for like 2 years. So how did you end up being the first guy to welcome everybody into every episode of Skates at the Stakes?
Well, we started right after the bubble, the crushing loss to the Tampa Bay Lightning. And I was the one in charge of recording the audio. So it just made sense for me to kick it off and get things rolling.
Yeah. That's how it works. That's a little peek behind the curtain, kids, for all of you would-be podcasters out there. You guys do something that I could never do because I'm far too old. But like, you guys have started to record right after games are over. Usually if the Islanders win a game, I just want to like go to sleep afterwards and remember that feeling. And if they lose, I'm usually so mad that I will, you know, watch whatever it is that I can get my mind off of them. I mean, how do you guys manage to like kind of control your emotions when you're recording just a few minutes after the Islanders have either won or lost? That's something that's really unique to the show. I mean, you guys have a unique show as it is, but that, I find that fascinating because I'm like, man, I could never in a million years do this. I would be falling asleep in front of my microphone, but you guys have pulled it off. How did you manage to do that?
Oh, it's just based off pure raw emotion from us, honestly. Like, I remember last year when Anders Lee scored the game-winning goal against the Rangers at MSG. I believe it was October, November. I don't think I've ever been more fired up for a podcast in my life.
Yeah.
That got me going. I was like, oh my God, they just came back in the garden. Anders Lee, off a call that helped the refs gave to us. That was incredible.
That's
fun. But yeah, we just do it, win or lose, raw emotion, get our feelings out there, whether it's positive or negative, which with this team, you never know what team you're going to get. So
yeah, tell me about it.
We like to keep it real, real as we think it is.
The two times Mike and I have gone right after a game was once, well, not really a game, when immediately after Tavares signed with the Leafs, we were just like, we need to talk about this right now. Like, we can't wait another day. We need to go right now. And then after that Washington game last year where they lost, and we were both so pissed off that we're like, we need to talk about this right now.
And I have to ask you, AJ, because you're a man after my own heart in this hobby, but you're always posting jerseys that you just find thrifting. So I got to ask you, what is the weirdest Islander jersey you've collided with out there in the wild?
the weirdest and best Islander jersey I've ever found was an Adrian Acoin 2003, I believe. I might be wrong on the year. All-Star game.
Those cream colored wild ones. Those are beautiful. Yeah.
I found it. I saw it. It was, I think it was like $250 or $300, something around there. But I'm like, when in my life will I ever find a game used jersey by a New York Islander? Nevertheless, an All-Star game jersey.
Yeah. And a good looking one, too.
A great looking one.
Yeah.
Now, he only wore it in the photo shoot, but who cares? The fact that I was able to find that.
Yeah. That's insane. I mean, the fact that they only wore that in a photo shoot is even makes it even more rare. Like, that's crazy.
I want to say he picked up a point in that All-Star game, and I was jacked up.
Yes. Funny story about that. He scored one of the weirdest All-Star game goals in history. It bounced off, like, three guys. No one knew he scored it until, like, 5 minutes after the fact. They had to rewatch the tape that month. It's on YouTube. It was really weird. That was
And I just remember being so excited. Yeah.
That's funny.
Because I was like, look, they're saying New York Islanders on ABC or ESPN, whatever it was on at the time. They keep saying the word Islanders.
Right. We need to do an all Weird Islanders All-Star episode. Because it would be basically Scott Lachance, Mariusz Czajkowski, Adrian Acoin. Like, that's these three guys represented the Islanders. Oh, Josh Bailey, I guess, too. Like, these guys represented the Islanders in the All-Star game. And it's like, really? They did? That's insane. But the only problem is we would have to talk about Rick DiPietro's All-Star game, and I don't feel like doing that. Anyway.
Can't forget Mark Trey.
Oh, yeah, I did. Boy, how could I
the
forget
new,
about
the
Mark
new watch entrepreneur.
Oh, wow. Yeah, he's been doing that for a while. Yeah, I definitely can't afford one of Mark Streit's watches. I love Mark Streit, can't afford one of his watches. We are here, though, to talk about a man who is definitely not on any All-Star team for the Islanders or otherwise, and maybe he owns a Mark Streit watch. We don't know. But we're really excited to revisit this player and this the first year he was with the Islanders, because it's one that we really loved, and we're excited to go back there. So, AJ DeVito, will you please reveal the subject of tonight's episode of Weird Islanders, the podcast?
The legend himself, Tom Kuhnhauser.
Handsome Tom himself. Handsome.
Yes.
We're going all the way back to the heady days of 2018. It seems like a lifetime ago. Before we get back there, reminder that we are on Patreon, patreon.com/islandersanxiety. Plans start as low as $2 a month, and you can get ad-free episodes of this show, plus bonus podcasts, written posts, and all kinds of cool stuff. So sign up today, patreon.com/islandersanxiety. All right, AJ, the first question, as always, out of that whole list that we showed you, what made Tom Kuhnhackel jump out at you as the Islander you wanted to talk about?
Well, Tom Kuhnhackel, first off, is a German-born hockey player. Obviously, I am Italian, German, and Polish. I'm big into the German hockey scene. I like Dreisaitl, I like Stutzel, even though he dives all over the place. Big fan of German hockey. And the Islanders have a really weird tie with German hockey as well. They've had a lot of German players over the years. There's only been around 50 or 52, I believe. And we've had 7 or 8 of them play within our organization. Oh, so it's kind of funny.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to think of a few here. Butenschan, obviously, the best German player in
Grice,
NHL history.
Obviously, Grice. There's one too. And Kuhnhackel. Yep. Wow.
Kuhnhackel.
Seidenberg. We had Jason Holland.
You know what? He didn't even come to my mind because he's still so like omnipresent.
Yeah. Right. Okay. So that's 4.
German. Krupp was a German.
Oh, Yui Krupp. That's right. Yeah. With Krupp.
Yeah. Jason Holland, apparently. I believe there was one or two more I might be forgetting. Wow.
That's amazing. I never would have guessed the number was that high, to be honest with you. It's crazy.
44. 44 German. Play again.
That's great. Yeah, there's a Butenschan jersey out there in the wild at a, I can't remember what deli it is, but there's like a deli in, like where Dan's old stopping grounds of like Seaford, Massapequa area that there's a Butenschan jersey hanging up behind, the counter.
My friend
ran into back in the day.
I gotta find that. All right, so but outside of that connection, what was it about the incredible Tom Kuhnhackel that like kind of spoke to you? Because he's an interesting player. I mean, he spent more time scratched than he did playing for the Islanders. But he is kind of a legend in his own way from that one season. I mean, what were your feelings when the Islanders signed him in July of 2018? He had played with the Penguins for a while. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But like, were you excited that he came over to the Islanders, given your like kind of history following German hockey scene?
I was happy to have him. I know he, you know, won a cup in Pittsburgh. He was a decent role player there. But another reason why I really picked him was it. He's just an ongoing joke between me and my other co-host, Jake, of Skates at the Stakes, obviously. We used to always talk about Tom Kunackle and call him Top Line Tom because he played with Barzal for some reason for a few games. Because New York Islanders, we had Ross Johnston playing with Matt Barzal. We had Tom Kunackle. We had Leo Komarov in a Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals play with Matthew Barzal. I love this organization so much.
But it's funny that, like, it's funny because, like, yeah, Tom Kunackle playing with Barzal is one thing, but, like, he was probably a scratch the night before. So he goes from literally eating popcorn in the press box to being on the top line. That I don't know what other teams that do that. I mean, maybe there are, but, like, certainly the Islanders do it pretty frequently. It's a little crazy.
Yeah, and it's not just, like, a little stint in the press box either. It's he's eating popcorn for, like, a week and a half while the team's just traveling. They're, you know, Nashville, Dallas, Arizona. Right. Come back home, play a game against the Bruins, and then Tom Kunackle's drawn into the lineup. Oh, and also he's playing with Matt Barzal in the top line minutes. And his I feel like Kunackle's when he signed with the Islanders, there was some consternation, I guess, about him, and I didn't understand it. They were like, "Well, this guy's numbers are terrible. He gets caved in at 5-on-5 with the Penguins, and if you're not gonna be good on that team, what are you going to be like with the Islanders?" And I couldn't wrap my mind around that because I feel like anytime the Islanders played the Penguins, Tom Kunackle was like unbelievable. He was scoring against us, and a lot. I think a lot of that just comes down to the Penguins were generally beating us during that era before Kunackle came and kind of broke the curse. But I remembered him being like this like effective player that the Islanders didn't have an answer for when they played the Penguins. And I'd have to go look in his game log, and I'll start doing that as we talk here. But I'm pretty sure he scored a few goals against the Islanders that just absolutely pissed me off.
Well, the Penguins have that ability to like take these sort of role players and elevate them to sort of villain status, particularly when it comes to the Islanders, because the Penguins are always the villain. And like, you know, Sidney Crosby, it drives me nuts when like everybody's like, "Oh, you gotta love Sid. Isn't it great? He just played his, what was it, 1200th game or whatever." I don't have to love anybody. Like, I hate this guy. This guy has made a career out of destroying my team. Why would I, you know, celebrate him? And the fact that the Islanders have beaten them, his team, twice in the playoffs is just music to my ears. Like, it's
almost like you'd be like, if you talk out against Sid, it's like talking out against a medieval king or a lord. If you were in Canada, they're like, lock him up, stocks. That's treason, high treason for saying that you hate Sid. How can you hate this guy?
Very easily.
I'll show you 162 reasons why.
Exactly. And Kunackle was a part of those teams. I mean, he played most of his games with the Penguins, and he actually won two cups with them in both 16 and 17. And yeah, he always seemed to kind of be around, and it's weird because growing up in Landshut, Germany, he grew up a fan of the Penguins, and he ended up getting drafted by them in the fourth round in 2010. He came up, played in Wilkes-Barre, played again for the Penguins, you know, 16, 17 or 6 or 7 years later. But then he wasn't signed in the 2019 offseason. And so obviously that's famous for the Islanders for losing John Tavares. And the day after, they replaced their captain with Tom Kunackle. Right wing, former Penguin, Tom Kunackle. And like you said, I mean, his numbers were not particularly good. He wasn't like, you know, seemingly a kind of guy who, you know, you really needed. They had so much depth there. But whatever they saw in him. And they signed him to a 1-year contract and brought him in. And he started getting scratched. Like he started, you know, pretty much as a scratch. But then he started working his way into the lineup. Ended up playing 36 games that season, 4 goals, 5 assists, 9 points in the regular season. We're going to get to the playoffs in a little bit, I promise. But like, AJ, is there anything from that regular season that kind of stuck out to you in watching Kunackle? I mean, it's funny that he played 36 games because I could have swore it was probably twice as much as that. But then I'm going through the research and I'm like, oh, right. He would be scratched for, like Mike said, you know, weeks at a time and then come and play a couple of games and then get scratched again. And so to end up with 9 points is certainly not, you know, going to jump off the page, but it's like, that's probably not too bad for a guy who spent most of, you know, three quarters of the season in the press box. What was it? Was there anything that stuck out to you watching him during that regular season? Like, yeah, this guy's pretty good, or yeah, maybe this guy's not really the future of German hockey or something like that.
Well, I know our fan base has a love affair for guys that aren't really good enough to be in the starting lineup, but are also bench role players.
Yep.
Now with Julien Gauthier.
Yep. But, the backup quarterback. He's always the most popular guy, right? Yeah.
Exactly. But you can't forget from 2018-19, one of the most legendary games in the final season of the Barclays Center, the Tom Kunackle brace against the Vancouver Canucks, where he scored a goal behind his back, I believe behind the blue line.
Yep.
Hooks one down the boards. Good Branson there, trying to tip it around for Hutton. That was blocked. Now Kunackle is tripped. There'll be a penalty, and the Islanders celebrating like the puck is in, and it is. It snuck in past Markstrom on the stick side post. A delayed penalty, but there will be no power play as the Islanders have tied the game on a strange one. And you can see Travis Green looking on. Kunackle just slid that one towards the goal, and Jacob Markstrom didn't have the pad up tight to the post. Kunackle just circles around, lets it go, and you can see it goes off the pad of Jacob Markstrom and just into the corner.
I think he was on his back when he scored.
Just hooks it. And you can see Jacob Markstrom, that right skate's not tight to the post.
When they signed him, too, like, I felt like they already had him, or different versions of him. I'm like, all right, so they got Leo Komarov. What's the difference between I didn't know Leo at the time. Obviously, he just came over to replace John Tavares, and we got the better of that deal. So Komarov comes over. I'm like, what's the difference between a Leo Komarov and a Tom Kunackle? And there's a little bit of a difference. Or what's the difference between a 34-year-old Val Filppula and a Tom Kunackle, right? Besides, the position. Also, that year we had still had Steve Bernier in the minors. So what's the difference between the past his salad days, Steve Bernier and Tom Kunackle, and similarly, like, Steven Gianta?
Oh, right. Still getting time.
Like,
yeah.
They had so many spare part guys already. But I think of the bunch, like Filppula and Komarov were in a class of their own, obviously. But of that second tier, it was Kunackle because he showed flashes of skill. He shot 13.3% that season, which tells you that he wasn't getting many shots on goal because he only played 36 games, and scored four times. But I mean, like this game, this season, it felt like every one of these kind of Tom Kunackle players in 2018-19 played their role almost perfectly. Whether it was Gianta, whether it was Tanner Fritz for a few games, Lucas Spezza on defense.
Yeah.
They were just like random guys who came in and out of the lineup. And maybe at the time it was, annoying to watch them, but they never like set the team back at all. And Ross Johnston, obviously, too. Like, these guys just came into the lineup, did their thing, and it worked. And I guess a lot of that comes down to coaching. And also that team, I don't know if I can remember a team where everybody was pulling in the same direction in quite a way like that team.
Yeah. Well, and there's a man who we have not really mentioned yet, which was that this is obviously the first season under Barry Trotz, and Barry's magic was really never stronger than it was in that first season when, he got the Islanders to buy into the system, buy into the culture, set the culture, set the tone, and really create an identity for themselves that they hadn't had before. And like you said, I mean, guys like Filppula and Kunackle and Komarov, like they immediately fit into a role, and they played that role. And well, and they managed to, you would think that, like, this guy had 9 points for the Islanders in 36 games. It's not a whole lot, but like the fact that he was out there doing his thing and it didn't necessarily hurt them was pretty important. Like, he could show up, they could trust him to go out there and play, and it wouldn't ruin things. But yeah, that goal against the Canucks was pretty crazy. Falling backwards on his ass. Not the best goal Jacob Markstrom's ever given up, but it was certainly a highlight, and I remember people being like, wait, Tom Kunackle plays for the Islanders now? That Penguins guy? And how the hell did he score that goal? But it was pretty great. And then, they made the playoffs that year, obviously. They were matched up. It was not only did they make the playoffs, but I don't know if people really understand the gravity of, like, having home ice advantage in the playoffs for this team. Like, that had not happened in God only knows how long. And this team, after losing its star player, after coming in, being written off, full of guys like Tom Kuhnhackl, are all of a sudden hosting playoff games at home, which is insane. And of course, who is their playoff opponent in that first series that they're hosting at home? The goddamn Pittsburgh Penguins. Here comes Tom Kuhnhackl's childhood team. And it's game one against the Penguins. This is keyed up, ready to go. And Kuhnhackl somehow is in the starting lineup for this game. And not only in the starting lineup, like, he's literally one of the first guys on the ice. And 30 seconds, what was it? 30 seconds, something like that into the game?
Yeah, a minute and something.
Yeah.
Very, very quickly.
Breaks across the blue line and literally destroys the entire roof of Nassau Coliseum with a goal that is then called back on offsides.
Ralston's checked. Martin trying to hold it in, and now it gets cleared. And carrying a right back in, is taken up and scores! They're going to check this to see if it was offside. But what a start for the Islanders.
After review, the play was deemed to be offside. Therefore, rolling on the ice is overturned. We have no goal. Please reset the clock to 1929.
AJ, talk us through this moment here, which, again, if you've seen this, and everybody listening to this probably has, this is not a moment you'll forget, regardless of whether or not it's on like a, you know, score sheet in perpetuity for the rest of our lives. This was an insane moment. And I remember watching this at home and being like, holy shit, I can't believe this. What were your emotions watching this goal unfold and then getting taken off the board? Because it was a real roller coaster. It's almost like a microcosm of rooting for the Islanders altogether. But like, where were you and how did it all unfold to your eyes?
I was at the lovely Nassau Coliseum with one of my good friends, Steve.
Good God.
This has to be, as sad as it is, a top 10 wildest Coliseum moment in history there.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Holy hell.
It was wild.
It was nuts. Mm. It was just everything about it. It was the fact that we were playing the Penguins. It was the fact that this team even made it that far after being written off. Tavares left. We had no hope. We're going to tank for Jack Hughes. We're playing in the playoffs on home ice. And this was, everything was just so magical about that year. There was finally hope. Barry Trotz turned the Long Island doubters into believers. Mm. It was just magical. It was so awesome. I was there. The loudest massive, massive goal since 2001 at the Coliseum. That the place just erupted. I thought the roof was going to come off. And then the downfall.
Yeah. So who was offsides? I know I had the video, but I can't remember who was offsides. Was it Bailey or whoever? I guess was also on. Then we might have been Barzal. Actually,
I want to say it was Cizikas. Actually,
oh, was it?
I can't remember though. Yeah. Or it honestly might have been Kuhnhackl himself. Like, he might have hopped over the boards.
Oh yeah. Right.
Actually, but that shot was wired. I was sitting on the opposite side of the Islanders benches, but had like randomly ran into some tickets, like somebody at work got me tickets in decent seats for that game, and we got there early and we're tailgating, and it felt like a celebration. Like, the Islanders were 200-1 to win the Stanley Cup that year. They were one of the biggest long shots on the whole board, and it felt like in the parking lot before, a celebration of just the team, and everyone was fueled by spite. And we were talking about, wow, this team, you know, does have a chance. They could maybe they could do it if the goaltending holds up against Murray. And that, it just felt like this whole season was culminating to a moment. That whole season felt like it, like there was a crescendo coming, and you didn't know when it was going to be. And it honestly could be a goal that didn't count, because that, as AJ said, that was as loud as I've ever heard the Coliseum. And the shot was wired.
Yeah.
but it almost felt like time stood still, like watching it. I can close my eyes and picture that puck leaving his stick and just how smooth the whole thing was. Kim kept coming on the ice, getting that pass and just wiring it past Murray, and the crowd just erupting. And in a weird way, the crowd didn't get despondent after they called it back. And it felt right that the hockey gods then gave us a goal. What, 45 seconds later with Eberle? Like they did not wait long to put a tally on the board. And it's a strange one, because that was probably the pitch perfect moment of that season. And in true Islanders fashion, it's just not, doesn't exist. Like it's just that those minutes, those seconds of that play are just not in the record book anywhere. They're in our minds, but they are not real.
Yeah.
It's alternate kind of weird, freaky stuff. And, it's a question on this. It's one of the themes of this podcast is asking folks, wondering what these weird Islanders think their legacy is. And with Kunockel, I wonder if he that goal didn't count. So what does he remember about a disallowed goal in it? Cause it was a playoff game, obviously. And I'm sure he remembers it, but that was, it was just such a perfect moment and almost became even more perfect that it got ripped from us because of this team and its plight in life.
I'm going to go ahead and assume that Tom Kuhn-Hackl has never scored a goal that elicited that reaction from a crowd ever in any place. We're going to talk about where else he's played later, but like, I don't know if any goal he's ever scored or non-goal he's ever scored has ever gotten that reaction, because it was wild. It was completely insane. Whenever the play-by-play guy gets drowned out by the crowd, it's awesome. And this happens a lot. I don't know, however, NBC used to mic these crowds, but like, there've been a couple of Islanders games where like Kenny Albert or whoever it was got drowned out. And it was pretty wild. I mean, again, the place was so keyed up and so excited to host a playoff game for the first time that goal, even that non-goal, blew the roof off the place. And Mike, you're right. That's actually a good point. I hadn't really thought about that. When the goal got called back, I don't remember people being like, really despondent over it. They were just sort of like, oh, that sucks. But they were still like, we felt, I think, at least to me, I think most Islanders fans felt that like, we had already put the fear of God into the Penguins.
Yeah,
right?
We just punched them in the mouth. Tom Kuhn-Hackl just punched them in the mouth.
Just punched them in the mouth. And again, obviously the Islanders would sweep this series. This was the famous, game one to the Island, Josh Bailey overtime goal. And the Penguins never recovered. Every time they scored, the Islanders would score and take the lead right back. And yeah, that was exactly what that was. A punch in the mouth to the Penguins. And it really set the tone for the series going forward, which was pretty special, pretty incredible for a goal that doesn't exist to this day. And the fact that the three of us are here talking about this event, I gotta stop calling it a goal. It's an event that got, wiped off the score sheet is really remarkable. Cause I mean, I will never forget the sound and the sight of that goal. So the Islanders, swept that series. They went on to get swept by the Carolina Hurricanes, which is a whole other story. Kuhn-Hackl returned to the Islanders on another 1-year contract. But it was kind of more of the same. A lot of healthy scratches, a lot of, here and there. Got put on waivers a couple of times. Played a lot for Bridgeport, by the way, over the couple of seasons. Played not as many as you would think, but he did get sent down there and played a little bit with them. But year two of the Kuhn-Hackl experience wasn't really as good. 28 games during the regular season, 3 goals, 3 assists. It's funny too, because like he had 15 points and 16 points for the Penguins those 2 years. So Mike, you're probably not wrong that he did contribute more, and they probably scored 15 of those points against the Islanders for all we know. It's kind of diminishing returns here. But that was the bubble season, where obviously AJ, this is important for you guys, because this is when you started your podcast, but, he played in the bubble with the Islanders when the season resumed in Toronto later on. And this has got to be one of Matt Martin's greatest goals. I mean, there's not a ton to choose from, but like Kuhn-Hackl made a between the legs pass to Martin, put it right on his stick, and he scored. That was pretty remarkable.
Made 16 saves so far in the game. Panthers don't have a shot here in the second period. The puck is loose. Tom Kuhn-Hackl left it for Matt. The puck came loose. Kuhn-Hackl
great play and another job of forechecking as he that line, even though Matt Martin doesn't normally play left wing with those guys. But look at the good hard forecheck. There's the pinch by Green, keeps it in. Kunuckel out in front. Puck's turned over. And watch this play. Oh my goodness, is that any good? You talk about having hockey sense and awareness. Kunuckel sees Matt Martin's there and he just shovels it through the five hole. Big Brian Boyle, a little careless with that puck. You got to knock that into the corner.
This is a guy who had skill, but he just didn't show it that often and didn't really get a chance to. I mean, AJ, do you remember watching him during this bubble run? And I mean, I don't know, where were you when this, I don't remember this goal at all. But watching it again, I was like, damn, Tom Kunuckel, he could bring it sometimes. I was impressed, but I totally forgot he was on this team because he was used so sparingly, but like, do you have any memories of him playing in that bubble run?
He played only three games in the bubble, but it was just, that goal was incredible by Matt Martin. They just steamrolled the Florida Panthers. The Islanders just wanted it more in the bubble, and they showed that series after series. Obviously, they can only go so far against the mighty Tampa Bay Lightning, unfortunately, but that's how the podcast started. I watched almost every game from my best friend from since I was in kindergarten, Connor, who was an original co-host of Skates at the Steak House. We had a barbecue every game outside, watching it with all our Islander friends and the Islander neighbors around my town in New Hyde Park. It was awesome. It was great. And it was honestly, the friendships we made from there are friendships that I'll have for the rest of my life. And I know how awful that time was for a lot of people, but the bonding that the New York Islanders gave to all of us that, you know, not even just me, but everyone that watched that entire playoff run and really got into it, those are lifelong memories we're all going to have because of this hockey team.
Oh yeah, definitely, for sure. And I mean, that run really was very special, and I mean it really reignited. I mean, the first Trotz era did, first Trotz year did too for me, but that bubble run really ignited a lot in me, and it really, you know, kind of, not that I wasn't, I mean, Mike and I have been doing this podcast long before that, but like, it really reignited the sort of the passion in me. And you know, my only regret about it is that more people didn't watch it, because man, that team was a buzzsaw. The Panthers and the Flyers and the Caps, they didn't really know what was coming. Like, you know, I know it took seven games to beat the Flyers, but they really outplayed them in that series. And, you know, they got lucky on a couple overtime goals, which sucked, but like, man, those series against the Panthers and Caps, they just buzzed through them. I remember Barzell's overtime goal, and just Eberle was going off, and Cizikas, I think, had a goal against the Panthers that, again, was kind of like a punch in the face. Like, no, you're not taking this. And it was just a really special team. And I, you know, I really wish I had remembered more about what Kunuckel had contributed to them, because I really love that team. That was a fun bunch. And they were playing guitar and playing ping pong in the hotel. Like, it was just a fun time. They should have made a documentary about those guys. Maybe somebody from Toronto would pay more attention to them if they did.
Yeah, that the bubble run it's got such a weird place in like my fan's eye almost, because like AJ said, it was such a strange time, and it almost felt like you just didn't know if just one day the NHL was just going to say, oh, by the way, we're done. Like, we're just canceling the rest of this experiment. It's not working, or someone got sick or whatever. So like, there was some like weird, almost jeopardy to it, that you just didn't know the next morning if it was still going to be going on. And I think that prevented me from really enjoying it as much as a lot of other people did. And I, like Dan, like I remember some moments from that bubble run, but I do not remember really much about Tom Kunuckel being on the ice. I can remember some clear, distinct games of his and plays of his from the season before. And yeah, the bubble's just like, it's such a blurred memory for me that it's hard to remember it. And that season too, when before it got paused, some of the memory that sticks out to me more than anything is like the biggest memory to me, just off the top of my head, was JG Peugeot's debut.
Yes.
When he stepped on the ice.
Jacob Michael Trouba.
Now Cole gets lit up by Trouba. Right. Peugeot fights him. It gets tossed. It scores. And then he scores. Yeah. And like, it's just, it was an insane game. And so, yeah, if that's like really the thing that comes to front of mind for me, I can't really picture Kunuckel, but it's just funny to think that he was in the bubble with these guys, because that's, I think, what solidified, you know, this group becoming the uncles, becoming so tight, and Tom Kunuckel was there for that.
Unfortunately, my big memory from that, aside from the actual run itself, was Adam Pellick suddenly not showing up for a game because he got hurt playing soccer in the hallways before a game, and kind of seemed like scuttling their season. But somehow, through the worst means possible, he managed to come back and play for them and play really well. So, yeah, so Kunackle, was in the bubble run, was part of the team. And afterwards, again, he had only signed another 1-year contract with them. He ended up signing a PTO with Bridgeport in 2021 when the season resumed. And in reading it over, I felt a little bad for him. Like, here's a guy who had contributed, obviously not in a ton of games, but like he had contributed a lot to that team during a really weird time and a really successful time. And then before you know it, he's kind of like fighting for a spot on their AHL club, which I thought was really weird. And I tried to do some more research and look into it and see why. But I guess at that point, they had just sort of like kind of found their mix. And you know, they didn't want to necessarily lose him, but they didn't really have a spot for him in the NHL. So he signed a PTO with Bridgeport, but I don't really think it went too far. I mean, he ended up signing with a team in Sweden in August of 2021. So I guess that 2021 season, he was kind of around, but I don't think he played much. He also might've gotten hurt, I'm not sure. But then, yeah, he left for Sweden. This was when he starts his European era, left for Sweden, Skellefteå, I guess is how you pronounce it. And believe it or not, the guy is only 31 years old. That's what's kind of funny too. This seems like a lifetime ago, but Tom Kunackle's right now, he's only 31 and he's still playing. He's playing for the Mannheim Eagles in his homeland of Germany, which is pretty interesting. I mean, I don't know. Well, we'll look him up and we'll see how he's doing there. But I mean, AJ, to me, Kunackle was like kind of a there and then he wasn't there type of guy. Like, I don't think I realized when the 21-22 season started that he wasn't around anymore. And obviously that season kind of went off the rails for the Islanders. So Tom Kunackle was not front of mind. But I mean, have you followed his career since he left the Islanders, or were you kind of like a little bit bummed that this guy who seemed to have a place all of a sudden didn't, or did he just kind of disappear into the ether for you too?
He definitely disappeared, but it was kind of expected. Obviously, yeah. The Islanders weren't going to give up Ross Johnson to keep Tom Kunackle. That's
of course
fine.
Not.
That makes sense.
Alas.
Ross is here to stay. Not anymore now, but at that time, Ross was always here. And that was also kind of the emergence of Oliver Wallstrom. He finally started playing in that very weird post-COVID year, right, where we had no fans half the year. That's when he finally started to get game time, started playing. So that's another guy that's taking a spot from Tom Kunackle. And no one can really argue that Tom Kunackle should be there over the first-round pick, potential elite sniper, now that we know he's not an elite sniper. But at the time...
Sure.
The right move.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah, I mean, and that's just, you know, we've talked about this too on anxiety, like just as the team gets better and more guys sort of stake their claim, you know, got depth guys get kind of forced out, and Kunackle is as cool as it was that he was part of these big moments. Yeah, he definitely wasn't a guy that they needed to keep around. And, you know, when you could keep Ross Johnson, of course, you obviously have to have to keep the boss until you don't, in which case it was the beginning of this season. But so he spent 2 years in Sweden with Skellefteå, and then he's playing for Mannheim right now. As we speak right now, he has 13 goals, 13 games played, 3 goals, 5 assists for 8 points. That was Kunackle numbers.
Yeah, that is about what I was expecting. There was, I think, a time, was it last season, where like Val Filppula was leading the Finnish league in scoring or something like that, but yeah, Kunackle is just not gonna be posting those numbers even.
Definitely,
but I tell you what, he probably is the most handsome, player in the DEL.
I haven't seen everybody in the DEL, but I'm gonna go ahead and assume that is true. But yeah, so I mean, he's still out. It's again very rare for Weird Islander to still be out there doing his thing, and maybe somebody will do like a Weird Mannheim Eagles podcast and talk about him for them too. But there's a couple of other things that I thought were interesting about Kunackle that honestly, I don't think I realized. Now, again, after leaving the Islanders, he just kind of disappeared into the ether. But in 2022, he was playing on the German Olympic team in that sort of weird, again, COVID Olympics. And I thought that was pretty cool because his brother and his sister and his father all have played professional hockey in Germany. So he's kind of a... a legacy there. And I remember hearing about his dad playing. And his first pro team, going all the way back to his youth in Germany, I thought this was great. His hometown team had, I guess, a junior, his hometown had a junior team, and they were called the Landshut Cannibals. You could look this up. There's a Landshut Cannibals Wikipedia page, and there's a whole story about why they're the Cannibals. I think it's kind of like a weird German translation thing, but boy, do they lean into it. Their logo is of a very crazed man who may or may not be a cannibal. That's an awesome team name. And if you're looking for a fantasy hockey team name, there you go. Landshut Cannibals. That's for you. Now we need to talk about a man who watched all of Tom Kuhnhackl's games as an Islander. That would be our friend Butch Goring. And to Butch, Tom Kuhnhackl, with or without the umlaut over the U, is not pronounced Tom Kuhnhackl. This man is called Kuhnhackl. That is how that is how Butch always, and like in doing the research, I'm like, that's right. I forgot he always called him Kuhnhackl. That's the funniest thing.
That's, he was like, I think for Butch has been calling games a lot longer than I didn't even realize. Like he's been around for a while now. And I would say that Kuhnhackl was like the first one that it started to become a thing. Right. Like he started to really, I don't even want to say butcher, but carnivalize names. He took us for an adventure on all these names. And I know the Islanders had just recently played the, from when we were recording this, the Hurricanes, and Dan was saying that he had an adventure with Kotkaniemi. but what I like about like Kotkaniemi, like the Islanders see him 3 or 4 times a year.
Right.
What I like about instances like Kuhnhackl is he's on the Islanders. So so Butch, eventually you think that somebody would tap Butch on the shoulder or Butch would hear it like, hey, it's Kuhnhackl. And he just doesn't do it. He just doesn't. Yeah. It's kind of like how he almost exclusively refers to Noah Dobson as the Dobber now.
Yeah.
And sometimes, what did he just, because he'll like put the and Dobber together in a very quick, like the Dobber. And he just tried to say Jake DeBrusk or what? What was he just saying? The Dobber. But yeah, Kuhnhackl was really the first one.
I guarantee you some more than one person said, you know, it's Kuhnhackl, right? Like that. And he was like, Kuhnhackl. Like he just probably kept saying, that's what I'm saying. Kuhnhackl. No. Kuhnhackl. It's Kuhnhackl. Like, and they go through, they probably had other German guys. No, it's Kuhnhackl. Yeah, Kuhnhackl. That's what I'm saying. But yeah, the fact that he just leaned into it and was like, I'm calling this guy Kuhnhackl. I don't care what the hell anybody tells me. Probably did that too. But that put a smile on my face because this is a guy who did not play many games as an Islander. I mean, in fact, the total sum of his 3 years in the organization, 64 games played, 7 goals, 8 assists, 15 points. I mean, he had 15 points in one season as a Penguin. Here he had 15 points total in 64 games as an Islander. And actually, no goals in the playoffs, just 4 assists in those 2 runs. But he made an impression. I mean, made an impression on Butch Goring. He made an impression on us with his offside goal called back. And I mean, he's definitely like a part of that, again, that first magical. I mean, you said it before, everything about it was magical. Like, it's just that first year with Trotz was, I mean, I could just think about that season all day. Like, I could just go back. Somebody needs to write a book about that season because it was amazing. It was just unbelievable. And the fact that like guys like Tom Kuhnhackl showed up and like all of a sudden became valuable role players was really remarkable. And I think that goes, you know, here again, Barry Trotz is working for another team right now and they're kind of having some struggles of their own as we record this. But I think that we will always have a fondness for Trotz because of this season, because of guys like Tom Kuhnhackl who are going to make us smile. And I mean, AJ, like, what is your big takeaway from this era, these 64 games of Tom Kuhnhackl that spanned two of the most successful seasons this team has seen in decades? I mean, again, I'm quite a bit older than both of you guys, and I hadn't seen a season like this in my lifetime, or, you know, barely since I was in high school. Like, I mean, for you guys coming up in a time when the Islanders generally sucked, this is the golden era right now. We're living in it right now, and this was really the first season of it, and guys like Tom Kuhnhackl are a big part of that. So, like, what's your big takeaway from this guy and this era?
The era itself, I will always appreciate until the day I die. I grew up going to games at the Coliseum. My father and I were season ticket holders. They sucked. They were awful every year. It was the same thing. Yep. 2012-2013 was finally the first glimpse of hope. But once Barry Trotz came through those doors, everything changed. Even with losing John Tavares, the team just, it was magical, like we said. So that error itself kind of helped. I always loved hockey, don't get me wrong, but I fell in love with everything about hockey, the Islanders, all that around that era. That it will always stand out for me as like, this is what I've been missing out my entire life with the New York Islanders. And playoffs, having fun, you know, thinking that we're a contender. It's awesome. I love it. And you got to thank Lou Lamoriello for that. I know that's kind of a hot topic for some people right now, but hey, we had it.
Yeah. And I've got something that just came across my desk.
Oh.
Tom Kunackel's dad, Eric Kunackel, was named the German hockey player of the century.
Oh.
And that's not even the best part about this. Because, Dan, I remember when you brought up his dad, I was like, there was something about his dad that I can't remember that they talked about once. And now I'm pissed at myself for not remembering it. So doing a little research here. Well, the show's going on. And now I remember exactly what got me geeked up about his dad. His nickname was, and I'm going to say this in German, and I apologize to AJ and any other folks who are German, because I'm going to butcher it, but it's Kleider Schrank auf Kufen, and the translation to that, of course, is his nickname was the Wardrobe on Skates.
Wow.
Because wardrobe of his mighty appearance. Skates. And they mean like the wardrobe as in like a closet, like, you know, a big dresser. Not like a haberdasher.
Yeah, I was like, so he's like a real clothes horse. Like his real. I was going to say, is he like the Clyde Frazier of German hockey? No. Like he's always dressed to the nines, the whole thing? No, he's just as big as a dresser, basically.
But he has a different nickname in Finland.
Oh.
Which is because I guess he must have played there a bunch. His nickname in Finnish is Iso Eriki, which translates to Big Eric for the same reason.
Wow, was he a big guy? Like how big was
he? yeah so his wardrobe on skates refers to his mighty appearance in Finland. He is known as Iso Eriki for the same reason.
That's amazing.
Per Wikipedia.
That's fantastic. Wow. AJ, as a person who of German extraction, does this fill you with great pride to know that the skating wardrobe is part of your heritage in terms of hockey, you know, the sport of hockey in that country?
We'll take it at this point. We're seeing a hockey renaissance right now. Anything back then, happy with. Now we have Dreisaitl, Stutzel, Paterka is coming up. I know I'm forgetting some names, but it's awesome to see. Oh, Mo Sider, of course.
Oh, of course. Yeah. Yeah. Does the Italian part of you love Kyle Palmieri and Matthew Maggio? Because I know when I see Palmieri, I get a rush of national pride because I'm like, yeah, this guy could be like a cousin of mine. I don't even know.
Kyle Palmieri is incredible. I think go down 20 years in the future, Kyle Palmieri will be one of the most underlooked Islanders of this, you know, the 2010s to now, or 2010s to 2040, we'll say. He doesn't get the love he deserves. I know he has his injury struggles, of course. I've been talking about how good he's doing right now. I know this is going to come out later, but as of right now, I believe he has 7 points in 10 games and doesn't feel like it, but he's doing it. He's awesome. Then, like you said, Matthew Maggio, the younger prospect we got from Windsor, I believe, sixth round pick, another Lou masterclass gem. He's awesome. He's doing decent in the AHL. He's still a very young kid, but Italian pride, we love to see it here on Long Island. Beautiful.
Yeah, you know, we didn't get Senny Milano, but maybe that worked out for the best. I was really pulling for him especially as an Islanders fan. But yeah, it's always fun. Like, it's just, I don't know, it's, to me, you know, Palmieri, I agree with you. I think, you know, obviously the injuries have hurt. I think he's gonna go down as one of the better, you know, the trade itself was fantastic. And I don't want people to forget that, you know, the trade for Palmieri really, really did help propel the Islanders to that second run to the semifinals. Since getting that contract, he's been hurt a lot. But when he plays, when he's healthy, he's usually been pretty good. Or like that one season, he was completely snake bit. But there is something about having a guy, an Italian guy from Smithtown, play for the Islanders. Like, it just, I it makes me smile. I don't know why. I find it very fun. I think him and Casey Cizikas, whenever they score, I always get extra excited because I don't know. I feel a kinship with Paul Mayer. He doesn't know me from Adam, but there's a car dealership a couple of minutes away from my house here in Jersey. And the owner must be a huge hockey fan, because when you go in there, there is a wall covered in hockey jerseys that are on behind glass and autographed, I guess, of different guys who have bought cars from that dealership. And Rick DiPietro is there, Matt Molson is there, and a Ducks jersey signed by Kyle Palmieri is there, because I think he bought a car there before he even came to the Devils, which is pretty remarkable that he would eventually come to the Devils and then come to the Islanders. So I don't know. It's kind of a funny thing to me. We've leased a couple of cars from there, and I'm always like, I can't believe I'm leasing a car from a place with a signed Kyle Palmieri Ducks jersey hanging on. I mean, Molson and DiPietro are wondering, like, why the hell would they come out to Jersey to lease a car? But the Palmieri thing is just so random. That's almost as random as a Sven Butenjohn jersey in a deli in Seaford, which now I have to go find. Yeah. But I think I
tweeted a picture of it before, so I'll track it down somehow.
Yeah, I've probably eaten it that day. Well, AJ, this has been great. Again, you guys do such a great job. We're always telling people to listen to Skates of the Stakes. I love the podcast. The energy you guys bring is great. I mean this in the best possible way. It's like hanging out in a dorm room with my friends. Like, it's just hanging around. Except in this dorm room, you guys actually talk about the Islanders, which is not what my dorm would have been, because nobody cared about the Islanders when I was in college. But you guys do such a great job, and and the funny thing is too, you guys pump out a ton of episodes. Like, it took us 8 years to get to 250 episodes. You guys seem to have gotten half that far in a quarter of the time, because you must really the three of you, Rad Martin and Jake, you guys really do a great job, and it's great to hear you keep going. So I hope you guys keep going. Is there anything special you guys have on the horizon this season? Again, it is early. We don't know when this is going to come out, but anything you guys have planned that's a little bit special for us?
Nothing too crazy. We might put out some t-shirts. Ooh. That's about it. But pretty much right now, we're just trying to do a podcast episode every two episodes, recap the last two games, talk about our feelings, what they need to fix going forward, which right now, a lot of things, but I digress.
It's always.
We try to just get podcasts out every two episodes, even if all three of us can't do it, because the big thing for us is just being consistent and keeping up with the Islanders' main storyline as it continues.
Yeah. And that's a lot harder than people think, is the consistency and putting out episodes, on a regular basis is really hard. Trust us. It's pretty hard. You think it's easy. It's like blogging. Like, it's really hard to keep it up. But you guys, really do a great job. And I love the games that you all play, like the different drafts and stuff like that, particularly during the summer. That takes a lot of work too. Okay. Don't minimize how much work you guys put into it. And it's fun to hear you kind of guys go back and forth and stuff like that. So that's great. So we've stumped for your show before, but tell everybody where they can find Skates at the Stakes and where they can listen to you.
You can follow us on Twitter/X at Skates and Stakes. That's where we post out our memes, our podcast links, but you could also find us Skates at the Stakes on anywhere that has podcasts, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, not SoundCloud or YouTube. So I take that back, actually, but the main ones you could find us on.
I usually listen on Spotify. And where can everybody find you on Twitter?
You could find myself on Twitter at DeVito Hockey.
You definitely should follow AJ there at DeVito Hockey. And I hope we've had a lot of fun. This has been great. I hope you had a good time.
This has been awesome. So honored to be on here, guys. I've been listening for so long. So cool to finally be here.
Oh, well, we appreciate you listening and coming on. Michael Leboff, where can everybody find you on Twitter?
The Big Lebowski with two E's.
Follow Mike at The Big Lebowski. Read and listen to his work at Action Network. Any final thoughts on Tom Kuhnhackl, Eric Kuhnhackl, skating furniture, German hockey, or car dealerships in New Jersey?
it takes a really special Islander to provide you with a moment that blows the roof off of Nassau Coliseum. Sean Bates, Josh Bailey, Anthony Beauvillier, the dynasty guys. But it takes a very weird Islander to do it in a moment that is stricken from the annals of history. So thank you, Tom Kuhnhackl, for that moment. because I it's a goal that didn't count that I will never, ever, ever forget.
Yeah, that's you always nail it. That's the perfect way to put it. Yep, we're definitely never going to forget that goal that never happened. And thank you, Tom Kunackle. And thank you, everybody, for listening. We'll be back again in a couple of weeks with another episode of Weird Islanders, the podcast. Read Lighthouse Hockey every single day for your most up-to-date Islanders news and discussion. Our theme song is Knuckles by Bjorn Falk. Find more of Bjorn's music at Bandcamp and on Spotify. Follow us at Isles Anxiety Pod. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And we're part of the Fans First Sports Network. So check out more at fansfirstsports.com. Shop vintageicehockey.com. Try wines from the Pinot Project. And we'll be back again in a few weeks. So until then, keep the Islanders weird, and we'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.